Coming up on today's show.
You always imagine what your big show would be, right? In the stadium, you have this picture in your head. Big band, fireworks are going off, and I'm flying across the arena, you know. Well, when we opened for Alan, we had 3 acoustic guitars, and that's it.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. So don't you worry, cowboy. Someone's joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from outside of Nashville. My guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who has a brand new 12-song album in the works. In 2024, he is celebrating 25 years since his move to Nashville, and he recently started a new record label and publishing company that we will hear about. He was the Texas Country Music Association's 2021 Country Songwriter of the Year and has toured with Alan Jackson, Clint Black, and Dwight Yoakam, and his top 5 songs on Spotify alone have a combined total of more than 750,000 streams. Back at the start of his career, his debut single spent 15 weeks on the Billboard Hot Country Songs chart, which was the first top 40 hit for Broken Bow Records. You've been hearing a song of his called Kamikaze. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, J. Michael Harder.
Hey, Bruce. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for having me, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you. How are you?
Absolutely. I'm great, and thank you so much for making time to speak with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Let's jump right in and have you start us off by telling the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing called Kamikaze.
Well, this is such a cool opportunity that happened for me. When I say opportunity, what I'm talking about is the opportunity to actually meet Rob Smets, who the song is about, and to learn about him. I grew up being a big fan of rodeo. I always, you know, was playing my guitar at the rodeos late at night. And when I say rodeos, in Arizona, we did a lot of backyard rodeos. So there was a good friend of mine that had a really cool arena in the backyard, and I'd go over, take my guitar over there, and they would play, and they would, you know, listen to me, and they would ride from bull riding to bulldogging, you know, team roping. So I grew up around it, and fast forward, and I'm living in Nashville, and I had met a songwriter here who actually was a principal at an elementary school up in Mount Pleasant, just north of Nashville. Anyways, he came over to the house. His name is Trey Stevens. And we were kind of trying to figure out what to write about that day. And he brought up that he was friends with this world champion bullfighter. Mm. Now, when I say bullfighter, it's not like the guy with the cape, you know, that says, olé.
Yeah.
And you jump out of the way. It ain't that. You know, a lot of people will call these guys rodeo clowns, but they're not the clowns. They're not the entertainment. They're the safety for the cowboys.
Mm.
And those are the guys that are getting in between the bulls and the riders, the athletes getting out safely.
Wow.
Is what their job is.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I said to Trey, I said, man, I have never heard a song about those guys.
Mm.
And I said, you know, tell me more about him. And he went on and on, and he actually grew up with Rob Smets around in his life, and I guess back to when he was in diapers. So anyways, got to hear a lot of great stories about him and about his career, and we took some real highlights from his career and put them in this song. I had an incredible response from it. We actually recorded it in my kitchen on my iPhone, and Trey sent it to Josie Smets, who's Rob's daughter, and she put it on Facebook. And it went viral, like, immediately.
Whoa.
like millions of views. And she put some highlights of his career on there, and people loved it.
Video highlights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, video highlights, exactly. And I was like, oh my gosh, Trey, this thing, people really love this. And we hadn't recorded it. It was just on my iPhone. You know, it was like echoey, and I think you hear dogs barking in the background and stuff. And, yeah, and so anyways, we went into the studio immediately and recorded it, and then took actually some of those video highlights that Rob's daughter had put in there and added some more of our own and some studio footage and made a little video out of it and put it out ourselves.
So let me jump in here and ask you a question, because when I hear a songwriter talking about a song that was, for all intents and purposes, I think you understand the spirit with which I'm saying this, was written about somebody, do you go to that person and say, hey, before I release this, can you check it out and make sure you're okay with it, that it's factually correct, that I have honored the spirit of the position that you hold? Or is it, Bruce, I'm a songwriter. I can write and put out whatever I want. I'm not going to have someone fact check my lyrics.
Well, in this case, it kind of worked out to where we didn't have to do that, because his daughter had taken and shared the song without us knowing she was going to do it, and he loved it. So right out of the gate, okay, he was like, before we even actually went in the studio and recorded it, for real, he was already in love with the song.
Okay.
And I actually ended up meeting him in person at a charity event in Fort Worth for an organization called Cowboys Helping Cowboys. They raised money to donate to families for injured athletes in the rodeo circuit.
Wow.
And it was kind of funny, Rob and I were sitting there talking, and he said, you know, it's kind of interesting when you have another man write a song about you, but I really like it. I said, oh man, yeah, that's hilarious. He's a really a down-to-earth guy, a great Christian guy. He has a great podcast. I guess it's not a podcast. He does like a morning prayer session that's really awesome. Rob Smets Facebook and Instagram, I think, is where it is. But yeah, and so I love being able to tell people about Rob. And I've really enjoyed being out on the road playing this song. I've played this song at a ton of rodeos. And I have guys come up to me and say, hey, man, I'm a bullfighter. Thank you so much for giving us a shout out. And they tell me that they play this song in their headphones or in their car and turn it up. And that's what really gets their spirits up to get into that arena with those bulls. It's
nice.
Crazy, man, what these guys do.
Wow.
Hats off to them. It's unbelievable. And I've sat and watched at many bull riding events where you know for a fact in a certain situation that if that bullfighter wasn't there, that cowboy would have been in deep trouble.
That's right.
And these guys are just fearless, and it's awesome. And Rob's the best of the best. He's 5-time world champion, inducted into the Hall of Fame. So what a better person to model the song after. So, yeah, man, really a cool experience to have been able to have the opportunity to even learn about the guy and sing about it. And it's just a great song, and it really seems to connect well with the rodeo community. So I love that.
Rob is terrific, and I'm glad. That's very nice of you to spend time talking about him. But you have got one of those stories that I like to label as results not typical. I want to break this into two parts. You told us where you're originally from, Arizona, but how did you get your start in music? And what were you doing music-wise before you moved to Tennessee?
Well, you know, other than just growing up, going to high school like a regular kid, and I used to sing in, they had these dance competitions for the dance class in high school. And so they'd have like a little mini talent contest in between the dance numbers. So somebody would come out, play the piano, or you could sing or tell a joke, you know, or show a talent of some kind, a baton, whatever. So I started doing those, and I was petrified. But my dad kind of pushed me along and said, you know, I think you'd be all right. You're pretty good. I think you'd be surprised. People will like it. So I did a couple Garth Brooks songs. I sang The Dance, and I sang The Change, which is another great Garth song.
And played the guitar too, or just sang these songs?
I played the guitar, and I had a friend back me up on the piano for both of those. And it was really cool, and Dad was right. They loved it, and the girls loved it, man. And I was like, wow. the girls like me more for this than my basketball skills, because I was playing basketball. And then I got cut from the basketball team. And I was like, man, what a bummer. So I really focused in on my music. I would lock myself in my bedroom. My parents bought me tablature books for all my favorite country artists, from Alan Jackson to Clint Black, George Strait, Ronnie Millsap. And basically inside the book, it has these numbers and guitar tablature. I can't read music, but I could read this.
Yeah.
So I taught myself for quite a while, enough to where I could sound good enough to where people would not tell me to sing that song far, far away.
And were you writing music also? Were you writing songs at that age?
Yeah, I just started. I had a crush on this girl, and she didn't know me. And the song was called "Does She Know of Me?" And it's not very good, but it's kind of cute. I don't know. I was maybe 16, 17 years old when I wrote it. Anyway, so from there, I went to college up at Northern Arizona University for a brief moment. I didn't even finish a semester. I had started college while I was still in high school and had some off-campus college classes. But when I got to the real thing, all I wanted to do was write songs and play in the bars at night, which is what I ended up doing.
Okay.
Well, playing in the bars at night did not lead to really early class. I didn't get there. A lot of the times I just didn't go. And I got about halfway through my semester, you know, and dad's paying for this, right? And so I remember the call. I had to call my dad because I knew that, like, you know, whatever that is, midterms or whatever come out. And I'm like, Dad, it's not going to look good. I really haven't been going. And here's what I've been doing. I've been writing songs and I've been singing in these bars. And he wasn't mad. He said, okay, well, is that what you want to do? And I said, yeah, I think I want to move to Nashville.
Wow.
And he said, okay. And I had a great friend growing up named Alex, and he passed away when we were in our early 20s. But his father was a big champion of my music and funded my move to Nashville.
Wow.
And funded my first album.
Well, the part of your story that I call results not typical, this part of your story is amazing. I'm talking about, quote unquote, getting discovered once you did move across the country. Tell the audience what I'm referring to when I say that you got discovered.
Well, I actually lived in Nashville for a couple of years, and I didn't really get anything accomplished. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anybody. And I made a few contacts and put some songs out there, but really was kind of frustrated with it. And I left and I moved back to Arizona to start a landscaping business. And about a month after my move back, I got a phone call that George Strait's producer, a guy by the name of Blake Mevis, took a liking to my sound and to a couple of my songs. And we went in and recorded an entire album with him, and he immediately got a record deal on Broken Bow Records. So that was just like, I mean, yeah, I move home thinking this is it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. And then next thing you know, here it comes knocking on the door.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by results not typical, because folks, as you just heard J. Mike say, he's not only the producer for George Strait, but Keith Whitley, Charlie Pride. Do you happen to know, J. Mike, do you happen to know how specifically he heard your music that, like you said, he took a liking to it, but do you know how it came across his desk, quote unquote, in the first place?
Yeah, actually, the investor that I was talking about, my friend's dad, had hired a guy as a manager. We didn't know anything about what a manager was, and this guy claimed to be one. I won't drop any names, but he was not a manager. But he was a blessing because he knew Blake. And we paid him a couple months for some services, and when found out we didn't really need the services that he would provide, but he knew Blake, and he hooked that meeting up. And it was really cool, man. You know, what are the odds of that kind of thing happening? And then the guy that, his name was Joe, and we never heard from him again. So I don't know. Maybe he was an angel. I have no idea.
But I'm a little confused because you said that you moved back home and all of a sudden you get this call from Nashville where Blake Mevis has your music, likes it, and he wants you to come back and do an album. But I said in the intro that you were the Texas Country Music Association's 2021 Country Songwriter of the Year. Did you live in Texas at some point?
No, I did not. And that used to be, I think they used to require that.
Ah, okay.
But they didn't.
Okay.
No, the song called Truck Back, which is actually going to be on my new album that's coming out, my version of it. We cut a version on it. On a guy named Chauncey Jones, and Chauncey was the artist, the TCMA artist that recorded that song that I got the award for.
Okay, I thought you were going to say that it wasn't going well in Nashville. You decided to move. I thought you were going to say you moved to Texas and then eventually came
no.
back. But,
no, I love Texas, but and I wouldn't mind living in Texas. I do love Texas. But no, it just, that was kind of a random gift,
yeah,
you know,
gotcha.
From God that
gotcha.
Happened. And, you know, Chauncey had entered the song into the TCMA to be voted on, and it won. And we were just like,
nice.
Wow, okay. He gave me a call one day and said, hey, man, we won an award. I said, we did? For what? What did we do? And he told me all about it. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I didn't see this coming. How cool. So I got to fly down and go to the awards and do the red carpet and all that fun stuff.
Awesome.
And Chauncey performed the song live. It was really great, man.
Awesome.
Got a really cool belt buckle, too.
Folks, let me give you my tour dates. The 2024 NHTE Tour, 10 years of talking tunes, is in full swing as I go around the country celebrating this show having hit the 10-year milestone back in February. The day that this J. Mike Harder episode is coming out, I'm going to already be in Los Angeles, specifically September 23rd to the 28th. So if you hear this that day, the window is closing to contact me for a meetup. Next week, October 1st through the 6th, I will be in the Florida Panhandle at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, including, but not limited to, a workshop that I am putting on Saturday, October 5, called Promoting Your Music Career. That is free and open to the public. The following weekend, on Friday night, October 11, I will be at the West Dawson Music Venue in Dawson Springs, Kentucky, in support of a show being put on there featuring three Nashville songwriters. Looking ahead, I will be a speaker at the Las Vegas Writers Retreat on December 2nd and 3rd, if you or someone you know writes, not music, but literature, books. I just sent a text this morning to someone regarding another tour stop I'm trying to put together and called someone else about another one different from that. So stay tuned to see what might still get added. Be sure you are receiving the weekly email newsletter, follow on Instagram, and of course, keep listening to the show. I would love to meet as many listeners as I can out on the road. J. Mike, back in the intro, I mentioned that you have recently started a new record label and publishing company. Tell us about that endeavor, including why you decided to venture into all that.
Well, it's always interested me, the music business side of things.
Mm.
And I got really lucky back in February. Some friends of my mom passed away in 2020, and I really believe in the spiritual world and angels and all that stuff, you know. So I really believe my mom led these people to me. There's some old family friends, and recently had sold a big stake in their health insurance business. They're not in the music business, but we started talking, and they're always big fans of my music, and you know, we kind of just fell into it on Groundhog Day, which is February 2nd of this year. We started Infinite Sevens Music Group and Monkey Cakes Music Publishing. Now, Monkey Cakes is my friend Ryan, who's my partner in it. He calls his little girl, Coral, he calls her Monkey Butt. And I call my daughter Baby Cakes. And we couldn't come up with a name for this thing to save our lives. And I said, well, let's just combine our nicknames of our daughters, Monkey Cakes. He went, all right, deal. So, you know, when you ask about why I did it and why I am doing it, I really enjoy being able to be in all aspects of my career. I felt a little bit out of control. I've had three different record deals, and with major distribution deals, Warner Brothers, Sony, Those were part of my Broken Bow and bigger picture deals. And I always felt like I didn't really understand what was happening behind the curtain. And it made me feel a little bit out of sync with my own career, you know. And I think that might be something that a lot of artists encounter. Because when you start doing this, you really don't know what's going on. And there's not really any school for it to teach you what's going on. So, you know, that can be a little bit scary because you see things happening. You see press around yourself. You see, like, a song on the radio. You're not really sure how that happened. And you sure wouldn't know what to do with it if you lost your deal. And I had a couple situations throughout my career where nothing that had to do with my fault, but the record deal fell apart. Either the money fell out, if there was an investor in the company, there was a staff change, you know, some things that are just really out of an artist's control. And one time I was left high and dry, actually right after my Broken Bow deal. The guy that signed me to Broken Bow moved over to another record company called Lofton Creek. And my management and this guy wanted me to go over there. And so I did. And it wasn't but about 8 months later into our first single that the money pulled out. And so there I was going, wow, cool. I've got this career going, but I don't really know how the heck it got going. I don't know how to run this machine. I don't know how to drive this car, you know? So it's a really scary feeling for an artist. And I think a lot of artists struggle with that because the music business is tough. I mean, it's just up and down, and, you know, you kind of have to just ride it for the thrill that it is rather than and try to predict it or think you know what's going to happen. I mean, you have the biggest dreams ever, but at the end of the day, you know, there's always someone better. There's always someone worse. There's always more money you could make. You could always, but, you know, if you're getting to do what it is you love to do, I mean, that's really, that is winning. That is success to me.
Nicely said. Nicely said.
The record company was just a way for me to really dig into, you know, my knowledge thus far. And I felt like I could get things going. And I know enough people now that we can hire the right people. And down the road, hopefully, the plan is to bring other artists on and other songwriters.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it should come as no surprise that rather than focusing on just your own music, you have chosen to start up a record label and publishing company that will, as you just said, serve others too. Because in the lead up to today, you told me that you love songwriting and songwriters and you feel that it's your duty to help others.
I really do. And I don't know if that is just a personality trait of mine. Probably that. I've always been that way. I'm the oldest boy in my family, two older sisters, a younger sister and a younger brother. But I'm the oldest boy, so I was always kind of in charge of things a little bit, you know, the sheepdog of the group, really. You know, if any boys were picking on any of the girls, it was my job. So, yeah, man, another one of the main reasons that I feel, you know, the urge to help other songwriters and artists is because so many people helped me. I really didn't know what I was doing, and nobody really does when they get into this. And you know, looking back now at some of my angels along the way, like Blake Mevis, who's passed away now during COVID, he died. And, you know, so I feel I owe it to them. And when it comes to other songwriters, I just have this place in my heart for them. I guess it's because of my own experience. And I know how difficult it is. And, you know, I'm a little bit further down the road than some people, obviously, just because I'm older and I've done it, and I see some pitfalls that a lot of writers make that I made, that I figure, why not help them to avoid those? You know, mistakes are mistakes, but, you know, good can come out of those, especially if you look at it that way, as a lesson. And if I can pass on those lessons to other writers, you know, before they have to learn the hard way, then I think I did my job. And then, you know, my mistake paid off, really.
Well, and God bless you for having that mindset, because too many artists, too many songwriters, whatever word you want to use, musicians, do kind of say, no, I had to go through it and I had to learn the lessons. You got to go through it and you got to learn the lessons. They get very possessive and hold their things close, their knowledge, their contacts, their resources, instead of sharing it. And, you know, the other side of it is that mindset, that wanting to help others, sounds like someone who has a Christian heart, and I think you also probably influenced me to draw that conclusion based on your having put out a song at the end of May called We Are One, God, Family, Country, which, by the way, features my guests from back on episode 408 of this show, Chapel Heart.
Yeah, love those girls, and B. Taylor. So yeah, that I am a very devout Christian, absolutely. That was a really cool project, man. That happened right during COVID. I didn't know B. Taylor. I met him from a friend in Arizona, and we ended up talking on the phone, and he said, I've got this song. I really think it'd be cool to put like a country twist in here. He's a hip-hop artist, and he is the music ambassador for the Navy. Which I didn't know there was such a thing. I'm like, man, that's really cool. He said, well, if you don't mind, come down to Pensacola and let's do, I forget the name of the base there. Do you know what it is off the top of your head?
I think it is just the Pensacola Naval Air Station. That's where the Blue Angels fly out of.
That's right. And we went down there and the Blue Angels were in this video. It was really cool. And it was like a, you know, like a Navy military service announcement sort of thing. I really wasn't sure what we were doing, but then he added Chapel Heart later and it turned out really cool. And it's a great message, great song. It's just one of those, you know, humanity songs. And it was really, really a cool experience to do that. I didn't write that. I just was a performer on it. That's all B. Taylor.
Well, but at the same time, I think that the message of God, Family, Country resonates with you, and so you were probably certainly drawn to it for that reason.
100%. Absolutely. We went down there in our camper and spent our own money and just did it to do it if this felt right, you know.
I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from outside of Nashville by singer, songwriter, guitar player J. Mike Harder. Visit his official website at jmichaelharder.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. At the beginning of today's show, you heard a song of his, and now he just talked about the single with Chapel Heart that was released at the end of May. Plus, we will have another song of his at the end of this episode. On jmichaelharder.com, look down at the bottom for links, logos, for Apple Music, Spotify, and Amazon, so you can get his original music. While you are on his website, look too for the logos for social media platforms. Specifically, link over to follow him on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. By the way, he is also on SoundCloud, which is one of the platforms that this show is available on. At the bottom of my website, nhte.net, there are all kinds of logos, both for this show, in terms of some podcast platforms, and social media. They are kind of from a standard logo pack. Otherwise, I would see about trying to get a logo, a link added down there too, for the Owl app. I just traded emails with the founder of the app yesterday, which I think is great that he makes himself available like that. In fact, you can even call him on the app. You will see him on there on the regular, as the kids like to say these days. Owl, it's like the bird, except with two W's and two L's, is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. I was disappointed to miss an incoming call on there recently, but guess what? When that happens, the app will send you a push notification that you missed a call, and then you can go into your list of notifications within the app and simply tap on request to call back. And then that person who tried calling you will get notified. And then voila, he or she can ring you back then. Keep in mind the privacy element. No one's phone number is being revealed since the calls happen right through the app. Check it out on my podcast website, nhte.net. Tap or click into the news section and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. The Owl app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up the app on your phone. It is a required field. J. Mike, set the record straight for us. I started into all that by saying that I am joined on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line by singer, songwriter, guitar player J. Mike Harder. Yet, then I told the audience to check out your website at J. Michael Harder. Walk us through the whole name thing.
Well, that's sort of been a little bit of an issue for me my whole career. To back up, my full name is James Michael Harter.
Okay.
H-A-R-T-E-R. Well, when I signed with Broken Bow, the dot-com boom was happening, and you had to have a website.
Okay.
Well, James Michael Harter was taken. Michael Harter was taken. And a friend at the record company said, well, what if you just abbreviate the James and just go by Jay? And that was available.
Mm-hmm.
I said, actually, that sounds kind of cool. Sounds mm-hmm. kind of official. So we went with it. And as I toured and got out there, I started to find out, you know, every now and then there would be a marquee that would spell it J-A-Y.
Oh, no.
Michael Harter.
Oh, no.
Or Jay, just the initial Michael Carter with
oh,
a C.
No.
Or I would get Harder with a D.
My gosh.
Or I'll get Michael J. Harder, because the Michael J. Fox gets stuck in your head. And so they go Michael J. Harder. So it's been a search engine thing we've been trying to figure out forever. Like, let's just make sure they can find me. But over time, J. Mike has been kind of a nickname that a lot of friends, family, and fans have started calling me.
Okay.
And that wasn't my idea. So I think it's just easier. It comes off the tongue. And the new album is going to be self-titled J. Mike.
Yeah. In fact, go ahead and tell us then about the new album that you're working on. 12 songs, and that's all I know. Who's producing it? What studio are you recording at? Are there any notable players you want to tell us about? And of course, is there a targeted release date?
There's not a targeted release date, but it's not going to be super far out. If it's not this year, it'll be the very beginning of next year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with a great, great producer, a guy named Jeff Huskins over at BMG. And it's been such an incredible experience. Jeff was in the band Little Texas. Yeah, played fiddle for them and did vocals. And everybody knows them and loves them. And I was really excited to get the opportunity to work with him. And we're recording at a studio. This is kind of cool, man. Full circle moment for me, really, with this experience. When we booked our first session, Jeff and I, for this new album, he said, okay, well, we're meeting at Soundstage Studios, and we'll be tracking at 10 a.m. And I went, man, that's just wild. I said, the first place I ever recorded in Nashville was Soundstage Studios with Blake Mevis.
Wow.
So, yeah, really cool. So we go in there, and I had a total flashback. It's a beautiful, beautiful studio. 5-star, just absolutely gorgeous. And I remembered, I told Jeff in the session, I said, man, this is kind of funny, but last time I was in this studio, I didn't know what to do. And I was, you know, when you track a full band, you'll have like 7 players, and they're all in isolated booths with their microphones and their instruments. And the singer is off to the side in another isolated booth, and I basically sing like a scratch vocal, like a guide for the players as we put the tracks down. Well, I didn't know that. And so Jeff and I were laughing about it because I said, man, last time I was in here, Blake Mevis looked at me and he said, well, are you ready? And I said, ready for what? He said, get your butt in there. I was like, get my butt in where? What am I doing? You have to sing. And I said, oh no. I said, I'm not ready to sing today. I haven't got it memorized.
Whoa.
And he goes, no, we don't keep this. This is just for the tracking. We just need you to kind of guide everybody along. So I read the lyric sheet and guided everybody along. But I didn't know that. And that's back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, you just don't know when you get into this business how anything really works. And it's just funny. It was really cool to get back in there and record with Jeff and be back in that room. You know, I felt the spirit of my angels and all the people that have helped me along the way. And this album is already just, I'm so proud of it already. I've got a song on there that I wrote with my daughter called Love Me Like the Rodeo, which is a really cool little tune. And we're getting ready to go back in and record the next 5 songs. And, you know, when you're an artist, I think that a part of you is always wanting to do things your way, but you also are torn because you have a lot of experienced people around you that have had success, and so you take the advice of others. But when it comes to the creative stuff, I think most artists really know who they are, but it's kind of a hump to get over that and say, no, this is the song I want, and this is the way that it's going to sound. And I played that game and sort of walked that tightrope for a while with my music. I don't think it came across in my music very obviously, but I had a lot of outside influences in the creative space. And with this album, this is just me and Jeff. And this is really a good snapshot of me. Being from Arizona, you know, I grew up a cowboy, grew up around rodeo and horses and the wide open spaces, the great outdoors, you know. So I really wanted to focus on that because that's really what got me into country music. And we really touch a lot on that in this album.
And speaking of rodeo, I understand that there is someone in your household who might someday be getting interviewed herself, not only perhaps talking about writing songs with you, but as we heard 7 weeks ago on episode 547 of the show with Jenna LeMaster, this person I'm referring to in your household might be getting interviewed someday about barrel racing.
Yes, she would love it. Her name is Aspen Lee Harder, and she is a big-time barrel racer. I mean, it is so... She's 9 years old, and she has a little pony named Termite. We have a great Pyrenees named Doug, and I think Doug and Termite are close to the same height. But you would not believe how fast this little pony goes, and this little girl, my daughter's fearless, and I never had that. I was a little timid about that, and I was always singing at the rodeos. I never got on the bulls. But I think if she was a guy, she would be. And if they'd let her, she'd do it.
Okay, but wait a minute, because people are going to hear you talking about her and say, did he just say that she's nine? Because I thought he said that he's got a song on the album that his daughter helped him write. And so, all kidding aside, just walk us through that, because I think people are going to say, oh, a nine-year-old, you just pat her on the head and you wait till she walks out and you don't use what she gave you. But you're including a song that she helped you with. So walk us through that.
Well, she just randomly started singing lyrics in my truck one day on the way to school. And I said, what song is that? And she wrote this thing called God Holds the World. And it's really cute. Actually, it's on my Instagram reels and it's on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
So cute. We're sitting by a campfire. And I said, well, who sings that song? And she said, well, I do. I said, well, no, I know you're singing. I said, but who, you know, who's the real singer? She said, it's me. That nobody.
Wow.
I said, you didn't hear that on the radio or something? Or on, you know, YouTube Kids or whatever you watch, you know? No, I just came up with it.
Wow.
And I was blown away. It was really good. And that happens to her all the time. And that's really how it happens for me. I don't really know how to write a song. I don't really feel like I'm the one that does it. To this day, I still don't understand. Because when a really great song hits me, it's just like that. It hits me. And it's just there. And I can almost visualize the entire thing finished. Before I even pick up a guitar to mess with it, you know? So I think she might have that. And she's come up with tons of lyrical ideas, and I do use them. And this song, Love Me Like the Rodeo, is no different. We were just sitting at the house, and I was kind of fiddling with a little melody that I had playing with on my phone, and she started humming along to it, And this is kind of funny, but I originally was saying, ride me like a rodeo. And I was just like, that was what was coming out. And she goes, yeah, I really like the song, Dad, and it really has a great melody. She said, but why would anybody ride you? And I went, oh, that's a good point. She said, how about love me like the rodeo?
Wow.
And I went, oh, my God. Straight from the mouths of babes. I said, that's the title. I threw the old title away and said, we're going with that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. If you're going to put your name on it, at the end of the day, you do have a career in music that you do have to look out for. And so as much as you might love your daughter and as much as you might think, oh, it's cute for me to maybe include her on a song somewhere, somehow, your name is going to go on this music. So you are, and I'm sorry to say it, but it is a business. You are, as a businessman, going to say, look, this is just not something that I want to have my name attached to. And, you know, if it's too juvenile, if it's too corny. So, you know, clearly, and I'm saying this maybe more for the audience's benefit than yours, Mike, but, you know, clearly, if it's not something that you want to have as part of your brand, then you are going to lovingly, as a dad, find a way to handle that situation. But you're seeing that, just like that example that you gave there. Now, she's big into rodeo. You are big into hunting and fishing. Is the solitude, I'm talking about being out in nature, something that provides for a great environment to really get some inspiration for song ideas? Or is it actually, it's the opposite, Bruce? That's my opportunity to turn off the songwriter brain and just relax and dial into the hunt or into trying to catch some fish?
No, man, honestly, it's a little of both, but my best ideas, best songs come out of silence. I write a lot with other people, and that's always fun, and being in a songwriting room is always fun, or with the band is always fun. But when there's nobody around, that's when, you know, God speaks to me. And that's the only explanation I have for any talent or whatever you want to call it. You know, I'm just listening. It's not really something I'm creating necessarily. I guess I'm co-creating with God in a way. But yeah, man, hunting and fishing, that's what I'm doing. We have a song on this new album called The Wire. And it's about a guy going out by himself, starting a fire up in the mountains, watching the rain go by, listening to the trees, you know, looking out over a thunderstorm, talking to your inner self, talking to God, and being out in the quiet. And you'll love that song, man. It's all about this.
But I'm confused. I'm furrowing my brow as you're saying this. The Wire, help me connect the dots. I don't understand. What does The Wire, how does that come into what you just described?
Well, The Wire is about the barbed wire. And there's a part in the song, you know, the canyon walls are the choir, and my angels sing through the wire. So, you know, that whistling when it's quiet out there, you know, there's not a whole lot of barbed wire probably down in Tampa, Florida, but where I'm from in Arizona, when there's just enough wind out on the plains, that barbed wire sings. It makes a sound.
Yeah, I was going to say, down here, the only barbed wire you're going to find is you're going to have to drive by one of the prisons to see that.
Razor Wire. That's a totally different song. But we could go there, too.
Next album. Next album.
Man.
As we start to wind things down, I would love to hear one or two stories about some of the great opportunities that you have had out on the road in terms of events that have featured some major headliners where you've performed.
Wow, man. I've been blessed to share the stage with some pretty incredible artists. Blake Shelton, Dwight Yoakam, I think you mentioned. And I would have to say Alan Jackson is the highlight. You know, he's one of the reasons that I started doing this. He was one of the tablature books that I had when I was 17 years old, sitting in my room playing guitar. And my brother and sister and I had a group on Bigger Picture Warner Brothers called The Harters, and we toured with Alan, and such a nice guy. I have to say, I've never been so nervous in my life at the same time as excitement. It's just an absolute thrill. I mean, you're being led up onto a stage. It's black in there. There's 30,000 people screaming. Somebody's got a little flashlight leading you up, and you know, you have like, okay, guys, you have exactly 28 minutes. And you've got it all timed, like all everything down to like what you say on stage, how long the songs can go. It's pretty wild. And such a cool experience to be able to do that. In a way, I remember it, but I also remember it like I remember a dream. You know, you could really only see like the first five rows of people, but you knew there was a whole lot of people in that stadium.
Well, but you're making me think of the lesson that you were talking about earlier of going into the studio, and he says, get in there. And you said, get in where? Because you didn't know what to do. So the first time you had one of those real big opportunities with a major headliner, you hadn't done it before. Everybody's got to do something for the first time in their music career. So did you have some of those moments of, I don't know what to do. I've never opened for a major headliner before. Because how do you learn those lessons? Baptism by fire.
Oh, my God, yeah. And, you know, one of the hardest things was, you know, you always imagine what your big show would be, right? In the stadium, you have this picture in your head. Big band, fireworks are going off, and I'm flying across the arena, you know. Well, when we opened for Alan, We had three acoustic guitars, and that's it. And that was a little bit of a stretch. I'm thinking, wow, this is like being up here naked. Mm. And we didn't know what to do other than just be ourselves. And our show consisted of some real life stories behind the songs. And the Harder's music was a little on the folk side of things. So it was very cool. But at the same time, like you said, I didn't know what I was doing. None of us did. It part of that was the thrill, though. You know, there was nothing mundane about it, for sure.
But was there a period where you had to approach someone with the tour and say, show me some grace, this is my first time doing this, I don't know what I'm doing? Or is it, Bruce, you can't admit that. They're going to say, how the heck are you on this bill?
Well, we did talk with our management and our record label, and we did, you know, plan out the show and had a pretty good idea of what we were going to do, you know, with a little bit of variables in there, not knowing what's going to happen. You know, sometimes a guitar string will pop or something, or somebody will forget a line. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that can go wrong, but you know, I don't think I ever really showed the vulnerability. Okay. and said, well, we don't know what we're doing.
Okay.
You know, I think maybe it came across, though, because we really didn't know what we were doing.
Truth be told. Yeah. Great stories. Great stories. And we are going to close today with another one of J. Mike's original songs, one called Cowboy to Blame. Before I let you go, though, and I play that track, J. Mike, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
This one's really cool. So I got really lucky to meet a guy by the name of Forey J. Smith. He's a cowboy, and he's a real cowboy, and he plays Lloyd on a television show called Yellowstone, which I'm sure you may have heard of.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's the real deal. And I was riding with my friend Marissa Rhodes, Taylor Lewis, and Amanda Williams. And I had been in the middle of this project with Forey that I got to write songs on, sing on, and produce, which is actually coming out here very, very soon, within the next couple months. It's a really cool project, and Cowboy to Blame is on the album. So us four writers sat down, and I said, you know, I really want to write a story about the real life of a cowboy that's driving from town to town chasing these rodeos, and what the sacrifices are that come into that. You know, not just your body and your mind and your money, but your loved ones. You know, there's always some cowgirl at home that's just heartbroken because this guy's off running around trying to chase this dream. And that's what Cowboy to Blame is all about. Wow. And I have a little bit of a personal thing with it too, because that cowboy in me is just a little bit on the edge and a little stubborn and a little hard-headed. And so I really could relate to this. And it's one of my favorite tracks that I've ever recorded. I absolutely love it. And it will be on my new album, and it will also be on the new Forey J. Smith album that's coming out shortly. I wish I had a release date for you on that. I just don't yet.
That's okay.
But it will be around the Yellowstone. I think Yellowstone's got a new episode coming out November 10th. So I'm in the guessing game. I don't get to know exactly what they're all doing, but I would assume they're going to put his album out around that time. So be watching for that. It'll be really cool.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Wow, this has been so much fun. J. Mike, great to meet you. Congratulations in advance. It sounds like we're all going to be in store for a great release. Folks, this is one of these episodes where I go out of my way to tell you how much I enjoyed the songs when the guests sent them to me. As I always say, it doesn't mean that I don't like the songs on the episodes when I don't go out of my way to say it. It just means that I really particularly enjoy, in this case, both of the tracks that J. Mike sent me. So we're going to be looking forward to the album. But for now, J. Mike, thank you so much for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. It was great to meet you.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much, man. And I would be more than happy and thankful to get back on and talk about the album when it's done and bring you some more music.
And in the meantime, audience, that's your incentive to follow him so that online you can keep up with when he puts out the updates and you know what the exact release date is going to be. So for now, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player J. Mike Harder. Do visit his official website at jmichaelharder.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Go get J. Mike's original music from the likes of Apple Music, Spotify, and Amazon Music, all of which you will find links to at the bottom of his website. Keep in mind, as I said earlier, that just like this show, his music is also available on SoundCloud. This morning, I followed J. Mike on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I'm sure he would appreciate you doing the same. Look on jmichaelharder.com for links to not only those three, but YouTube and TikTok as well. Let J. Mike know that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with J. Mike and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, 10 and a half years now, without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 554. Thanks ever so much for listening. I will send you out today with another song from J. Michael Harder. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Cowboy to Blame.
The world's been a strange and lonely place, seen through these eyes. I've fallen so many times on my face, it's hard to disguise. I don't recognize the bitter man that I've become, dwelling on the past instead of moving on. So I turn. Nobody but the cowboy to blame. Man, I know I messed up and too far gone to save. I know she tried to make me better, Lord. I got 1 foot in the grave. Only a demon would do an angel like I done. She flew away. I'm still out here on the run. So I turned. I'm running like wild horses toward the pain. Nobody but the cowboy to blame. I tune out my reckless heart, pretend that it's not torn apart, and everybody knows. Cowboy to blame.
Thank you.